You are listening to The Talking Earth. This is KBO Portland, 90.7 on the FM dial. This is Patrick Bocard, and I happen to be here at an undisclosed location with the three co-founders of the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Slam. Correct me if I am wrong, Jane Belinda.
We actually changed the name to the Bigfoot Poetry Festival because it kind of encapsulates more than just the competition. So
it's a festival, not a slam anymore.
There's a slam festival in it, but it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Slam is still a big part of it, but we want to make sure everyone knows that there's so much more to it as well.
And that was the voice of Julia Gaskill. Who was also a co-founder of the aforementioned Bigfoot Regional Poetry Festival. Did I do that wrong again?
No, I probably did.
And then that was Stephen Meads off in the corner, who was also a co-founder.
Yeah.
And I have bios for all three of them. But we're here to talk about the upcoming events. And the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Festival, which is happening
in June. It's happening in less than 3 months. This year it's taking place June 13th to 15th. This will be our third time putting it on. It's our first time with it being 3 days long. The previous two times it was only 2 days, and we're pushing the boundaries, and we're going to do a whole extra day so that there's even more things for folks to come out and take part in. We're really excited for it.
And that was Julia Gaskill. Her poetry has been published through Vagabond City Lit, Nailed Magazine, Knight's Library Magazine, and more. She was included in the anthologies In Absentia and Excelsior as the author of 4 chapbooks, the co-creator, obviously, of the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Slam Festival, and you still run Slamlandia bi-monthly?
Yeah, yeah.
And her debut full-length collection, Weirdo, came out through Game Over Books in October 2022, and if there people are looking to find that, they want to go to your website?
Yeah, my website's just juliagaskill.com, or you can go to Game Over Books as well. And
also on
there.
Sale at Powell's.
It is. You can find it at Powell's in the downtown
local.
Powell's, if you want to support local shops. Yeah.
Yes. And that was also Jane Belinda, who is the current Slam Master for the Portland Poetry Slam. They have competed nationally in Poetry Slams, including the final stage of the 2017 Women of the World Poetry Slam. They have been published in Button Poetry. That was recordings, though, right?
So that's on YouTube. Yeah.
So people can see that on YouTube, and it's visual as well as.
Yeah, I do a lot of motions and.
Digital publishing.
Yeah, get loud for sure.
And obviously, we already mentioned that you co-founded the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Slam Festival, and our third poet performer is Stephen Meads. Originally from the Bay Area, has been performing spoken word for over 20 years now. I have to keep updating this. I just changed the amount of years. He's featured at slams all across the country, from Portland, Maine to Honolulu, Hawaii. Stephen performed in the individual World Poetry Slam in 2013, 2014, and 2017, and has competed in the National Poetry Slam 5 times with various teams. And he has been featured on Drunk in a Midnight Choir, Slam Find, Right About Now, and Button Poetry as well. And do we want to hear some poetry now?
Yeah, we could start with some
poetry. Or we could talk about the upcoming events.
Why don't we kick it off with some poems?
Let's do some poems.
Yeah. I said that, so I'll start.
Yes.
So I could feel the vibes of wanting me to start. My first poem I wrote because the prompt was to take a sort of classic tale of some sort and make it queer. So this is my take on Jack and the Beanstalk. I wanted to see what the seeds looked like when the water soaked in and the sprout punched through the softened skin of its first body. My mother said I was tricked. told the whole town how a man had whispered lies in my ear and brought our home to crumbles in the process. I told her that I was given a gift. She told me that something was stolen from her. The man, the gift giver, he had eyes as gentle as the cow I arrived with, like he had only ever eaten grass. He didn't know what the meat was going to taste like, only that my teeth were not sharp enough for it anyway. He gave me a garden to grow. He gave me the names of all the flowers and sweet fruits I had never tasted. My mother said something had been stolen from me, too. I told her to look at all the green growing in the palms of my hands. Feel the soft clover blooming on my cheeks. I begged her to smell the bouquet cropping up on top of my head, and she said she could not see, or all she could see is the absence of the boy she had sent to market. That boy never came home. The magic of the beans was never about the stock. It was in the way they made me disappear. I could spend all day in my garden and no one would bother me or make me man of the house. I could be a boy with his flowers sinking my hands into the soft soil.
I'll share a poem next. This is a poem I wrote a while back. It's called Becoming. A memory heaves its way up through me yet again. An out-of-state school trip, Catalina Island. I had never been. I was ecstatic to escape my rain-kissed city, always dripping with memories of her. The hotel had a pool, nothing special. There was no shine or glamour to it. Adult eyes would deem it unworthy, but we 13-year-olds, all 29 of us, dove headfirst into the bacteria-infested water the moment the chaperones breathed go. Our young blood hollered, this is our time, move, destroy, yes, oh happy, oh free, as we tore off our clothes, a mess of gangled limbs adorned with bathing suits bought by our parents. We were kings of the water, unbridled thrill radiating off our bony elbows, awkward knees, eyes trying to sneak a glimpse of that which our church sanctioned unholy until the placement of rings, the hull of bells. I was one of this prepubescent brigade. I had emerged from the hotel room wearing my first ever bikini. If memory serves, it was cute, tiny, blue speckled with orange and yellow hibiscuses. My first taste of woman. My first revel in what I would one day become. I wore it like a festoon, a beautiful celebration, and this is all to say. My father was a chaperone and had not known of this act of revolt against my age. My mother's best friend had taken me shopping for a new swimsuit. My father so busy, and my mother so dead, and I so young. So she offered, bought me the bikini with delight, said, "You are old enough now." And the look on my father's face, the seeds of his hand on my arm, the bellow of no, obscene, change now, haunts me to this day. My first taste of woman. My first horror in what I would one day become.
I'm going to make sure, you know, I'll maybe get more close to the depth of these other two as we go on. But I'm going to, just in case people are like, oh, this bio mentioned a lot of slam and they want to have judgments, I'm going to, like, validate those judgments with my first piece. This is called Roadhouse Fucked, so that Roadhouse could fight or something. And it's about the two different Roadhouse movies you may have seen. Many boobs in the original Roadhouse. Like, I knew about the violence and the fighting and about the throat-ripping 80s actionness of it, but I guess I never realized the boobs. And I mostly bring that up because there are zero boobs in the new Roadhouse remake, which is set in the Florida Keys, mostly at night in a, get this, roadhouse. There's plenty of dancing and some drinking, obviously, and fight scenes. And once even, Jake Gyllenhaal kisses Daniela Melchior steamishly. But no boobs happen. And I don't know if that's progress or condemnation for all us sexless millennials who must have watched the original Roadhouse on cable TV or something with standards and practices editing out all of the boobs and not letting that one henchman dude say his line about fucking guys in prison, fatally his last words before his throat gets literally torn out, but the censors probably edited that to make him say something like, I found God in prison harder than you. And damn it if we the viewers didn't just sit there and go, sounds about right. In the TV edit, the Swayze is too zen for sex, has to save all of his chi for karate, and can't be bothered working his boob-touching muscles outside of, like, unloading on a bad dude's face and digesting all of that. I think we just grew up into our weird sexless lives, and I guess in some ways the new Roadhouse is trying to offset the balance. I mean, you see Conor McGregor's ass a lot. You see Jake Gyllenhaal's literally shredded abs. And sure, maybe modern sex in movies is meant to be male fantasy washboard abs that you can smash a bottle on, but ultimately those abs are just smashing bottles and not other bodies in some sex crush thing. I mean, you see these abs get knifed and bloody, but you don't see them get taut because a caress got extra sensual, and I know at this point it's just like beating a limp dick, but movies used to fuck. They used to get wild and freaky and have boobs just popping into scenes because the setting happens to be wet t-shirt night at the strip club that Swayze doesn't even work at. And now, they don't. And honestly, it just doesn't feel as memorable or as fun. That's the poem.
That's how it is. Yeah.
That's how it is. Because I watched both Roadhouses in one day.
Yeah, he does.
I have a confession to make. I've never seen either of them.
Me neither. I only know the thing from Parks and Rec where Andy says the whole plot of it. So I did know that someone's throat gets ripped out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it's true. Nobody puts baby in a corner. Isn't that from that?
No, that's not even from a
much better film, Dirty Dancing.
That's from a movie I actually saw. In the theater.
Yeah.
Anyway, just in case, like, I'll take a quick moment.
So thumbs down for the new one, correct?
I mean, they're both great in their own individual ways that are separate from one another. I'm just gonna, like, real quick rope in that, like, the festival that we're doing, you will hear poems like the first two that you heard, and that you will hear more poems in just a moment, but you will also maybe hear some poems like that.
About Roadhouse.
Just keeping it 100.
Yeah.
We're trying to incorporate as many sort of like aspects in the sort of the broad spectrum of of poetry and what it all can be. I'll turn it back over to Jane.
I think Julia and I eased into it a little bit, and you jumped right in, and I appreciate that about you, Stephen. I'm going to read a newer poem. This is titled Questions for Sunday Night, because I get the Sunday scaries so bad that sometimes I have to write poems about it. Did you relax? Did you do some self-care? Are you the same sad person you were Friday night? Did you spend the extra time doing something creative like you said you would, or did you spend it playing a phone game and absolutely fucking your circadian rhythm right up so now you start the week even more tired? Are you an artist or a gamer? Are video games art? Is playing video games art? Do you even take time to ponder these things and maybe exercise your brain a little bit, or are you just continuing to go through the motions? Does Monday feel like a monster chasing you? Does Sunday feel like a false god? Does Saturday feel more fun on paper? Do you wish you can quit your job and be a working artist? Are you worried that even that will eventually be tainted with burnout and the heaviness of capitalism? Are you using that as an excuse? Are you ever going to stop? Are you ever going to start? Have you decided that society is going to collapse soon anyway, so it's not worth trying to work within it? Are you using that as an excuse? How's your emergency prep going? Did you ever get more than a hand crank flashlight? Are you still thinking about getting a gun? Will you be sad if you don't get to use it? Will you ever be good enough for them to love you? Will you ever be good enough for you to love you? Is being good the right strategy? Do other people think of it as a strategy? Are you happy? Are you happy? Are you happy? Are you doing anything about it? Are you doing anything about it? Are you doing anything about it?
Okay. This next poem that I'm gonna share, I read at the Bigfoot Poetry Festival last year at one of our side events, the Feel Good Mic, where that the rule of that open mic is just no bummers. Gotta be all poetry.
All upbeat.
All upbeat poem, which is a feat for some poets to accomplish.
Some people think, oh, I'll do a love poem. Some love poems are bummers.
That's true. Very true. So that's the vibe of this poem. I type congratulations with 3 exclamation points onto a blank document because I want to let some teens know how well they did in their local youth poetry slam before I pitch them on committing to a whole-ass poetry festival they've never heard of. When suddenly, Microsoft Word pops up to say, 1 exclamation point is all that's needed. Hey, Microsoft Word. Who even asked you? How dare you try to steal my excitement as I compliment some kids on the greatness of their art? Google Docs would never. My pen and paper would never. Hell, even Twitter and Facebook would never. There is this ongoing joke that the hardest part about being a woman isn't the casual sexism or the internalized misogyny or the general fear for our own safety most days, but instead, it is that we are constantly so stressed out about how many exclamation points are okay to use in a single email. Hilarious, right? Because what is an exclamation point if not a way to let the reader know that we care? It is how we share our enthusiasm, bottle our urgency in text form, let folks know we give a shit about some serious or not so serious shit. I use exclamation points to let my friends know that the news they just sent me matters, to let my family know I am excited to see them on Tuesday, to let poets know that their poetry is pretty cool and so worth being excited about. I have spent so much of my life allowing the world to tailor my emotions, pat me on the head, condescend that I am being too much or not enough. So who are you, Microsoft Word, to now do the same? You can't even get your boy Clippy to do your dirty work because even he knows that this is some bullshit. I go back to my document and count 9 exclamation points placed within the entire text, and I scream good because what better way to let my voice be heard? I want to live my life like multiple exclamation points in a row, loud and joyful and in your face, bolder and italicized and underlined. The greeting you know is that is genuine and bright, the story rattling that ensnares you in its embrace. I want my joy to be the loudest thing in every room. I raise my arms at the end of every day, punching the air, yelling, I can't wait to do it again, because that is how you live the true exclamation point lifestyle. So yes, Microsoft Word, I did need more than 1 exclamation point in a row, and don't look now, because there's more where that came from.
Well... True exclamation point lifestyle.
Yes.
Very you.
Yes.
Sometimes you send only exclamation points.
I love exclamation points.
Like that. There's also a subtle mention that we're going to have like youth events in the festival. One of the reasons that we are expanding is to have more.
Mm-hmm. And we won't read anything about Roadhouse at the youth.
Sure. I also won't read this next poem at any sort of youth.
Oh, we're batting 2 for 2. All right.
I'm batting 2 for 2. This one is the goal, is to like shift it a little bit. It's an untitled poem I wrote probably about 6 months ago when Julia and I were on the Oregon coast. So it's gonna start pretty visceral. I'll just let the listeners at home know.
I know this one.
Yeah, Julia says that the kelp scattered along the beach looks like sea monster dicks. these single, bald, long, green, tentacle, noodle-looking heaps strewn across the shore. But I assert that it is actually the leftover semen of, like, a Poseidon jerk session, scattered about like that dude got so horny over so much smooth coastline that he busted, leaving his foamy sea cum splattered in long, ropey tendrils everywhere. Oh, mighty sea god. Presumably, Poseidon has a trident unit in his undersea pants. It's pronged and dangerous, this wild wave god who brings the water towards the coast every time he pops an erection. The tide is rushing in, coming ever closer to where we are walking on the wet, packed sand. Stop coming at me, I yell towards the sea, or Poseidon, or both. And the wind gets colder and more intense if you face into it. There are all these dead birds pulped along the beach. They are victims, I assume, of the same raging jerk fest. I ask Julia if she thinks that the ocean is sentient. Like, I don't believe in a singular god, but sometimes I do perceive the spirit of grand things. The sky, the woods, the sea. Us being the only two people on the beach feels like submitting to the sublime. Acknowledging how small we are within the cosmic sex of an ancient universe, I shorthand use Poseidon here because I do not know other names for a god of the ocean itself, but the primal royal of the waves, the bundle of kelp, the way all the sand is just eating itself all the time, coughing up tiny shells and small bugs, these all must be gods, right? The Greeks named death and the sea and the sun, but also they named, like, two different aspects of war. They named mini-bosses, and all of them, the gods and demigods alike, were wild fusions of creation and sex and cosmos and fear. They were the faces of the uncaring and unforgiving world that constantly overwhelms us feeble plebes who stand in the face of the wind and then joke about getting blasted in the primordial soup of this whole fucking world we keep killing everywhere else. Because the most terrible aspect of all of this is that I don't know the names of any gods for roads, or for cities, or housing redevelopments, or for urban planning. Who is the god of small town tourism boards? What god do I thank for the seclusion of an Airbnb? Who do I direct my prayers to in the voidscape of this dead bones beach, this post-sex apocalypse-scape? All the birds pulped and gored on their journey to becoming new earth. There must be gods for all these new dead things we keep building, right? I mean, this world. Look at this world. It has to be alive in a way that is larger than all of the small spent things left behind in its wake.
Wow.
That's the poem.
Why'd you bring up the children's event, the youth events before that?
I was just trying to, like, talk about various things that are happening at the festival as, like, interstitials and not jam it all in at the end.
And as a poet, you like juxtaposition.
Well, my poem
Julia's poem very directly referenced youth poets and slamming and her trying to convince people, as what I hope that some of this program does, to come out to the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Festival, a 3-day event, mostly free.
Yeah.
And where is it being held?
In downtown Portland.
Yeah, a bunch of different venues, including Powell's and the Central Library and Literary Arts, among other places. Everything, like Stephen said, and I'm sorry, I'm always sort of teasing you also.
No,
everything besides the final competition night is completely free. So that's our only ticketed event. That'll be the top four teams from 2 days of preliminary competitions. And you can go to the preliminary competitions for free, as well as a lot of programming during the day, like workshops and open mics. All of the stuff at the library is going to be kind of identity oriented, so a good place to express whatever you'd like to express, and then see other people of diverse backgrounds expressing their amazing work as well. Should I read another poem?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I do feel inspired by Stephen, because I was thinking about this poem and I was like, is this a good choice? because it is a poem about nipples. So I am going to read it. As a comfort, I like to look at my nipples, examine the architecture of these soft bumps that I carry with me on errands or very important meetings about poetry. Their primary biological function is to be cool-looking and sensitive. I take after them in this way. They were told they were too big, stuck out, should be covered up. Instead, I chose to crucify them, pierce through the flesh so they can bleed in public, cleanse them of the sin of underwire bras. I am, they are, a landscape of dunes, a series of tubes, a map to the Holy Grail and the Holy Grail. I am a god created in the image of their followers, and my nipples are a radical messiah, ready to teach each of us the paradise that can be created in the palms of our hands. I look down to see them prayerful. I see them healing others with a touch. I see them mesmerize even the most obstinate of dissenters, making them speak in tongues and attempt to sacrifice their own flesh for an opportunity to worship me in the goddamn sunlight. I see them like any good god would. With pride and glee and a single tear in my eye, I carry them with me with only one set of footprints. I feel an ocean of glory wash over my body. They are, I am, free of any shame that was hurled our way. We are so much splendor. Paul.
Cool. This next poem that I'm going to share is probably my most recent spoken word poem. And, yeah. All right. In March of 2023, my fiancé is diagnosed with diabetes, a disease I quickly realize I know nothing about except that it did kill Julia Roberts in Steel Magnolias, which I have not watched since I was 16, so that's of literally no help. Of all of the lifestyle changes foisted upon my candy-loving, sandwich-devouring partner, one of the key points delivered by his doctor is that he should start exercising more. And I guess we are in luck because our house is one block away from a gym. Not like your 24-hour fitness or Planet Fitness or Anytime Fitness or Crunch Fitness, which to me are all places I assume douchey bros congregate to talk about how much they feel seen by Matt Rife. I guess you could call it a mom and pop gym, though that is being generous. It is packed to the brim with equipment that is either 5 years old or 50 years old. The ceilings are literally caving in. It is weirdly always kind of dark. I think I've seen a total of 5 women there, collectively. It is the kind of sketchy place my woman spidey senses warned me to stay the hell away from. But for 3 to 4 days a week, my partner and I put on our shorts and tank tops and trudge to our little gym. And I am transported back to my time in college when I briefly decided to become a quote-unquote exercise person. Went to my campus's gym after classes and felt so uncomfortable on all of the equipment, how far I waded out of my depth. A halfling surrounded by hulking barbarians. All I wanted was to take up as little space as possible. I could feel my limbs sinking into the elliptical, unseen. I would give up equipment the second anyone's shadow lingered. I would leave early if I felt a man's eyes on the small of my back. I stopped going to the gym because I told myself it was not my world, how I never felt safe there. So now here I am, back in a gym. And I feel that creeping sensation of not belonging, a short lady with no upper body strength, not knowing what half the equipment is for. There is a part of my brain that says to just stay home. And then I tell my brain to shut up for 5 seconds. When I go to the gym these days, I take up as much space as possible. I take my time doing leg presses. I do not give up my treadmill. I linger by the weights until the spot I like to sit in has freed itself up. At the gym, I turn into a frenzy and let myself be seen. Hair a frizzy Medusa snake pile, a waterfall of sweat down my back, my skin red like wildfire. The walls of this gym are all lined with these pictures of weirdly buff bodybuilders, and I can hear them whispering, "You want to be like us, don't you?" And I say, "No, I just don't want to be winded going upstairs anymore. I want to be able to carry my 7 boxes of Christmas decorations up from the basement and not be terrified that I'll drop one. I want to be prepared that, should I ever meet Matt Rife, and should the moment present itself, I could knock him to the ground. I make this gym my space, a place I can call my own because I want my fiancé to live for 60 more years, a lifetime of loving him. So, if coming to this scuzzy hole a few times a week is going to keep him kicking, keep him alive, then I will sweat on every piece of equipment, turn blotchy workout monster 5 times over. Love makes us do ungodly things, like exercising. But I would lift every weight, run every mile, finally be able to do a single pull-up if it means not losing him. If it means our heartbeats pounding on opposite sides of our crappy little gym, sing a beautiful song of making it to tomorrow."
Yeah. still don't think I have 60 years in here. Okay. But...
Hey, Walt Curtis lived to 80.
That's true.
You know? And his exercise regimen consisted of walking around drunk.
Yeah.
So.
Fair enough.
He did hike a little bit.
This will be my outdoorsy piece. This is, the working operative title for this poem is "My Body is Always Wearing a 3 Wolf Moon Graphic T-Shirt." Inside you, there are 2 wolves. In the parable, one is good and one is evil, and the one you feed is the one that grows. And in the meme, one is X and the other is X, and you are also X. And in this poem, there are now 3 wolves. That's right, motherfucker. Inside you now, 2 wolves and a bonus wolf. Their personalities are going to be like the hyenas in The Lion King, or maybe Lock, Shock, and Barrel. What I'm saying is, no matter what the original 2 wolves were up to inside of you, the bonus wolf is a fuck-up. It's sort of inevitable. Extra wolves are always going to be kind of a gamble, right? Ask any pickup artist and they'll tell you, you don't get to have, like, 2 alphas in there. Granted, the whole alpha-wolf thing has been largely determined to be a myth. Science coming around to the idea that wolves structure themselves in loose families based around a breeding pair and their offspring and those offspring's occasional mates. And what I'm suggesting is you probably need some more wolves inside you. Let's say inside you now are 5 to 7 wolves, a manageable pack prepared to bring down larger prey that might be making you heavy. We're talking the caribou of overworking yourself. The bear of depression wintering in your bones. An anxious moose. All of them falling victim to the pack of wolves coursing through you. Can't feel the oppressive darkness of 5:30 p.m. in the winter when there's a whole pack ready to howl at the moon in your heart, right? The world can't grind away your bones when there's blood snarled across the teeth of 5 to 7 wolves coursing through your veins. What's that anxious moose going to do? Get drunk? Which is a thing that moose can do. Wobble. Make weird-ass moose sounds. After that. Not when you've got wolves howling inside you. Look, it is not always that easy. I get it. Inside of me, there is a lone wolf. It is starving, hungry, and if I feed it anything, it is usually mean. Sort of self-critical, often self-sabotaging, constantly self-loathed. The thing is, I know that the concept of lone wolves is a myth too. The same way science doesn't give a lot of credence to vicious battles for wolf rank supremacy, science doesn't really give credence to lone wolves either. Where there is one howl prepared to beckon the night, it is always just the prelude to a chorus. So I'm changing this. Inside every person now, there is a national park area. And perhaps, for some of us, at some point, there was a dearth of wolves, and the whole ecosystem got fucked up because of that. But we are reintroducing wolves into our systems. We are finding ways to live in new structures, building creative family bonds, and we are eating the overpopulated deer and other herbivores that grazed our bodies to their bones, and we are going to howl again with our teeth bright red and our bellies full. Poem. Poem about wolves.
I like that poem a lot.
Thank you.
I just saw that they're reintroducing gray wolves to Colorado.
Nice.
Good. That's cool. Because I've always felt like Colorado needed more wolves.
It did, too. It
does. Some of the Coloradans are not fans of it. But...
Oh, the NIMBYs of...
the people who have cattle, you know. But, yeah.
Yeah.
It's time
not,
to
not, not in my backyard, wolves. Well, we're going to do one more round of poems.
Yeah, we'll do
one more round. Do we have more to talk about with the poetry festival?
We've covered a lot of it. I mean, I want to also say that if you are interested in any of this, you know, check out... We primarily post on Facebook and Instagram updates on things. We also have a website, which is just bigfootpoetry.com. Very easy to remember. We don't have our programming up yet, but we are in the process of figuring that out. And I don't know when this episode is going to go up, but...
It should be about mid-April.
So. Mid-April? Okay, so around that time, maybe a little after, we should be getting our schedule out for all of the events that are going to be happening during the days. More precise, like, times and locations where you can find things. And yeah, just keep an eye on all of the goings on that we'll be sharing. And, we're also putting out a call for volunteers sometime soon. So like we said, our only ticketed event is Final Stage. That's happening the night of the 15th, and all volunteers get into that for free. So there's that benefit. And also you get take part in a cool, community event that we are putting on again for the third time.
No, that's a good thing.
And a drawstring bag.
You do get a drawstring bag and
oh,
a
yes,
lanyard.
That's important. I still have mine for the 96 Nationals.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I got to be a timekeeper and have the villain of his team standing over me saying, like, Justin Chin went 9/8 in an 8/100 of a second over, right?
What about Taylor Molly?
Taylor Molly's team, yes. Yeah, the Providence team was standing over my shoulder.
Yeah.
That's right.
Hopefully there won't be any...
Great memories.
Hey. Hopefully there won't be any villains at the
Taylor Molly will not be at the Bigfoot Poetry Festival.
We can't promise that, but it is very unlikely that he will be there.
It could happen.
But Taylor, if you find yourself listening to this program, you're welcome to attend.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'd love to have you.
I have nothing against him. I just don't think he'll be a villain.
I just remember that moment.
Oh, Taylor definitely got the villain cut in Slam Nation.
Yeah.
Taylor knows.
Yeah, he also got to win the Nationals.
So, true.
Enough of that. But there are also like other slam events going on throughout the year too.
Yeah, for sure.
And we've got a couple of fundraisers. We're going to have one more when this airs coming up, fundraisers to make sure that the Bigfoot Poetry Festival is free for everyone. So we've been kind of fundraising since we started in October, doing like one a month. And our last one's going to be like an auction / what we call it the Slam Olympics. And it's going to be a bunch of really talented poets doing very, very silly activities, like having to perform a poem after eating a bunch of very spicy hot sauce, which I did last year, and it was really spicy. What's the date on that one?
That's happening on May 10th, which is a Friday, and that's going to be at the Barrel Room in downtown off of Burnside. And that one's going to be a 21+ because it's a bar.
Yeah. But there's going to be like auction items from cool local artists and artisans. And there's going to be a raffle and probably some themed cocktails that you can get at the bar. And it's going to be a really fun night of a lot of really awesome poetry, but with a twist because we like to make the poets do do funky things with their poems.
Play some silly games.
Play some silly games.
Yeah. So. Probably after the festival this year, we'll take, you know, a couple months off. But like Jane said, like, in the lead up since October, we've been putting on one, like, kind of pop-up show, standalone poetry event a month, and that will probably resume sometime in later 2024 when the festival is over. You know, it is to help fundraise because it is very expensive to put a poetry festival on, but it's also, like, to give the community, like, something to look forward to and come out and keep Bigfoot, the Bigfoot Poetry Festival, in people's minds. So, you know, after the festival is over, keep an eye out also for more information on other just local fun events that are going to be happening the rest of the year. Yeah.
Cool. So speaking of fundraising, we do have an amazing sponsor, if you want to mention.
RACC?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just seems like a good thing to pop in there.
We should shout them out. the Bigfoot Poetry Festival is very grateful. We were awarded a grant this year from the RACC. That's going to help us, like, cover especially, like, venue rentals and advertising, a lot of other little things. And so shouting them out, it's very nice, and it takes a weight off of organizers' shoulders a bit. So,
yeah,
yay.
Thank you for continuing to support and fund local art and community building.
Yay, supporting the arts.
We love that. All right, well, I'll kick off the last round of poems. This is definitely more of a performance poem, so I'm going to throw it out there. The CDC recommends that anyone who can get pregnant should refrain from drinking alcohol unless they are on birth control. Here's a list of other recommendations for your modern baby maker. The CDC recommends that you don't spend summer nights with the window open, holding hands and confessing feelings unless you have figured out what daycare your future child will go to. Everyone knows what hand-holding leads to, and those waitlists fill up early. The CDC recommends that you take prenatal vitamins, just like all the time. The CDC wants you to know that it can take up to 3 days for sperm to reach the egg, so the exact moment of conception might be while you are drinking a glass of wine a few nights later. It's been a long day, you just got to kick off your shoes, you want to read a chapter of your book and then go to bed. And but you might also be 5 minutes pregnant, and it's pretty fucked up that you're drinking wine right now. The CDC recommends that you go to sleep early so you don't notice when they sneak into your house and whisper in your ear, "Get on the pill or else." They will stop at your fridge and take all your deli meats, cold brew, and soft cheeses. They will screech, "Not good for baby!" and then they will jump out of your window and fly off into the night. This is standard protocol. The CDC says they love you. Sorry, I misspoke. They said they love womb. Womb is sacred. They say body is just meat around womb. Legs carry womb around. Mouth takes in energy for womb to keep wombing. They say you are womb with accessories. You are potential. Only potential. Only a location for something else to grow. They say be well-oiled machine. Have eyes on the future. Even if you don't see yourself in it, the CDC recommends that you have no stress and you make no mistakes so that someday this hypothetical child could have a beautiful, healthy life. Isn't that the most important thing you can do? Why take any risks with your health when you might be hurting more than just yourself? Also, they say the pandemic is over, idiot. That's the end of the poem.
That's good. Oof. My last poem's a short one. I wrote it last year between when we did Slam Olympics last year and then between the Bigfoot Festival kicking off. Praise to a community who is all hands on deck, a mass of hands lifting you up. Dozens of hands perpetually high-fiving. There is something and everything to be said of the people you choose to surround yourself with, how they bring out all the best parts of you hidden away from normal life, how they radiate a brilliance that is indescribable. How do you sum up a swarm of folks who are all laughter in the corners, bounding bodies, a cacophony of cheers for one another? My heart is a scoreboard filled with nothing but tens. My smile is a poem I write whenever I am in your presence. Maybe this is what true home becomes as an adult. Not a building, but a people. The people you are happiest to claim as family, found and loud and showing up in every single way.
Mm-hmm. The beginning of that poem reminded me of Liz Lemon high-fiving a million angels.
That's a good, yeah. I don't think that I took it from that. But I get the reference.
Was like... That's a very sweet poem.
That's super sweet. It's like, I like the... I love the community. I love the energy of the poetry scene here in Portland. And I mean, like, I moved up here because I was so enamored of the way that the art scene was growing. And I think it's amazing to see how it's continued to grow and to get to be part of that and foster that. It's really exciting. I hope I'm doing an okay job. And I think that both of the co-founders of the Bigfoot Festival that are here with me have done just amazing things in terms of building and offering community to writers, poets, performers. Kind of every space is like an open, inclusive, and amazing space, and I'm really glad to be a part of it. I'm going to read one last poem, and it's... The previous poem I read is part of a series that I've been working on, and this is also in that series, so you'll notice some similarities up at the front, and then they'll go away, or they won't. Inside you, there are two rodeos. The first one is a clown show, except for when it isn't. The riders are all fuck-ups who get bucked off within like a fifth of a second. Nobody can rope for shit. Animals run squealing, wildly kicking all of the mud into the wranglers' faces. Someone is always getting crushed by a bull at your first rodeo. Everything is hard. The men, the women, the any genders, the whole thing is the toughness of leather and ancient tobacco chaw buckets. Everything is extra dusty. Your clothes are all caked in mud and hoof prints. Hands, the color of rust and clay, grasp you when you fall, and you always fall. And then there's your second rodeo. And let me tell you, before you even ask this one, brother, this rodeo will need to be perfect. Fact is, everything at your first rodeo, all of the fuck-ups, all the spilled beer, collapsed rodeo clowns, all the animals gone berserk, all of that is out the window by rodeo number two. Rodeo number two needs to look like a bespoke, high-end Western wear catalog photo shoot. Lights like the crushed velvet lining inside $10,000 cowboy boots. Stomp all you want at your second rodeo so long as not a speck of dust reaches into the sky. Second rodeo, sunset is constant and forever. A couple could get married at your second rodeo, and people would understand enthusiastically why they chose that venue, which begs the question, what the fuck are you doing here? Literally, you are one rodeo in, and that one was a disaster. And now, immaculate or bust? I think inside most of us where the second rodeo might be is bust. It's just a long strip of flattened dirt hanging under this haze cloud of all those dreams that get kicked up and bounced off in under 8 seconds. I'm not sure why I approach every rodeo like I can ride it out or like I have even ridden before, and failure or not on attempt one, if attempt two doesn't master the art form. Well, I mean, no one even has a third rodeo inside them. It is absolutely exhausting to run this ragged. But why keep returning if the ride wasn't meant to run smooth, you know? Just because the crowds whoop and holler unchanged from event to event? or because the fans of the stuff stay so passionate about it that they create whole aesthetics that you could basically live within, just because it keeps being there. Horns up, eyes sharp for this part. Every rodeo after the first is by default no longer your first rodeo, which means every successive rodeo, something must be improving, even if it doesn't wind up looking like those Western Horizons magazines or whatever, even if your dreams wind up more crushed than the velvet, it is worth it to know where once you couldn't hold the rope, maybe the second time out you can. Maybe on the second ride you go a whole second and you still wind up with dirt kissing you square in the teeth, spit it out. But inside you, I think there is a lifetime of rodeos. And even if none of them are ever perfect, every single one is worth the ride.
Boom. Love it.
So there you have it. The Bigfoot Regional Poetry Slam Festival is worth the ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is not their first rodeo.
This is going to be our third rodeo.
This
is
going to be the third rodeo. Belying that poem.
It's our first time doing one after having done one last year.
Right.
There's,
right.
We started in 2019. Something happened. We did our second one in 2023. And now we're doing our third.
Now
and
we're back.
It's bigger. But also not bigger. Like, we're doing the same amount of teams and stuff. So it's still going to feel the same. We're just putting
more programming in there.
Maybe a little bit more programming, but we're also going to be spacing it out. Last year a lot of things were like kind of clumped on top of each other, and there'll still be a bit of that because it's a festival, but we are hoping to like spread it out and have there be more ease for making it to all the events that you would like to come out for.
The other great thing about it, just to throw that out there, is we made extra sure that all of our events were really close to each other. Mm-hmm. So even if walking or however you get from one place to the other is a little bit difficult, we can we put a lot of effort into making sure things were within blocks and not spread out across.
You mean I'm not going to have the great experience of running for a bus to make it to another band I wanted to see at the music festival in the 90s?
You absolutely
and missing it and then running and barely seeing like 10 minutes of them and missing that other one.
It's 2024, so you can get one of those weird little scooters and scoot around if they still exist.
No, that's they true. Do. They do. There are plenty of them. In fact, I saw one the other day that had graffiti on it. Please dump this in the river.
I mean, I'm all for throwing those scooters in the river, but you could also use them if you want.
Yeah, they're useful.
Yeah, I believe all of our venues this year are within 1 mile of, like, one another, so.
And really within, like, a few blocks for the most part. Like, 1 mile is the furthest from mm-hmm. each other, but it's not going to be, you're going to be able to get to places really quickly mm-hmm. and hopefully be able to see a lot of cool events and participate in a lot of cool events.
Yes. Yeah. Our events, besides being open for the public to come and attend, depending on the mic or the workshop, you are also more than welcome to sign up and share some poems. The tournament in the evenings with the slam those are teams that are registered. So you can come watch those, but not participate. But anything else during the day, you are more than welcome to come either to watch or to sign up or do both. And all of our venues are ADA accessible, and our only venue that isn't all ages is our late night venue. Otherwise, everything else is all ages.
Yeah, and we'll have programming running like all day, including late night events. So definitely check our schedule, bigfootpoetry.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Bigfoot Poetry, Bigfoot Regional Poetry.
Like Bigfoot Regional Slam.
Bigfoot Regional Slam on Instagram. This is my contribution.
Contributed a lot.
You can find our events and look us up on Eventbrite too. We're posting mm-hmm. there. Like we said, we're running fundraisers, and we'll probably after the festival, we're probably going to take like a little bit of downtime to reboot, get some feedback, and start focusing on 2025. Oof. And we'll have more fundraising events later this year. Please just check us out. Support local arts. The literary scene in Portland is in an incredible place. I'm really impressed with it. A lot of other places, you know, maybe this is slightly more slam focused, but a lot of other parts of the country, following COVID, their spoken word scenes kind of like took a huge dip. The national poetry community kind of went through a shuttering event of its own in 2018, 2019, where the former national organizational body, Poetry Slam Incorporated, collapsed. And there's been a void, and a lot of other scenes have kind of like been trying to operate within a void and have been kind of rudderless. And I think having this festival, but in addition, just the spirit and community in Portland has really stepped up wonderfully. Yeah. And it's a really great time to be a fan of poetry, to be a fan of spoken word, literature, art. There are free mics and open mics and community events almost every night somewhere in Portland. There are so many amazing things going on. So get involved, check out some of those spaces, and then, yeah, please check out our festival. We've worked really hard on it. We're really hoping that you will come and have a blast.
You've been listening to Talking Earth. This is KBO Portland. My guests tonight have been Stephen Meads, Julia Gaskill, Jane Belinda. And everyone have a good night. Remember to go to the Bigfoot Regional
Poetry Festival.
Poetry Festival.
It's been a long night for me.
You just need to remember Bigfoot. Bigfoot poetry.
Bigfoot poetry. Everyone have a good night.
Yay.
What you are currently not hearing now on the KBO airwaves is my cat, Leah. It's a Siamese cat. He prefers to meow only when not being recorded. I wish I could record him in honor of International Pet Day or National Pet Day. But obviously, I can't force him to meow if he doesn't want to. That's Leo. That's Leo suggesting that you can donate to KBOO at kboo.fm/give. He feels it's very urgent that you do so. And now he's going to play with his stuffed animals. Back to our show.